Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, we drop into Melbourne University to meet the former students who, half a century ago, built the first Australian satellite. We will learn why, although first built, it was the second Aussie satellite to be launched.
Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
I'm Apollo 16 astronaut Charlie Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon.
Please join us from 7 to 8 p.m. on Wednesdays.
The Space Show, Australia, on 88.3 Southern FM.
What a ride, what a ride.
And at Melbourne University last Thursday, there were a bunch of guys who, well, they had 50 years to recover because 50 years ago they had been turning blue, awaiting the launch of their satellite. Yes, some students at Melbourne University built a satellite and persuaded the United States to launch it for them. It was the first Australian satellite to be built. But unfortunately, because of nearly 2 years' delays in the United States after they delivered it, a bunch of guys at the Weapons Research Establishment in Salisbury, South Australia, snuck in and they launched what became Australia's first satellite in orbit, which was ReSat. Well, the guys were back here at Melbourne University to celebrate the 50th anniversary of that event. They were introduced and welcomed by Mark Cassidy, who is the Dean of Engineering at Melbourne University. So we'll cross now right away to hear how these folks were introduced.
We're here today to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the launch of the first satellite to be made in Australia, the Australis Oscar 5. The satellite was designed and built by students from the Melbourne School of Engineering, from the Faculty of Science and the Faculty of Law. It was truly a collaborative effort. It's really, I know I said it already a few times, you know, you can overstate these things, but I really am really excited about this event. As Dean of Engineering at Melbourne, it's been fantastic. I get to talk about a lot of great historical stories, the bionic ear, Australia's first computer. I think 30 years ago, internet got pushed out from the Doug McDonald building. I'm not sure that's a good thing, but into Australia. But I really have been dining out on this story for quite a while now, as my colleagues will attest. So fantastic that you could come. We're really also pleased that we've got the team members from the original who worked on the satellite, Dr. David Belair, Dr. John Cation, Mr. Kevin Dixon, Dr. Peter Hammer, Mr. Steve Howard, Dr. Owen Mace, Mr. Richard Tonkins and Professor Rod Tucker. So welcome back to the... Welcome back to the University of Melbourne. Of course, there were other students involved in this project. But this project was really important because it increased public awareness and involvement in space research, which I'm sure we'll hear about tonight. But for me, and what's close to my heart, it's demonstrated the ingenuity, innovation, and the dedication of students. And in fact, as I said, I've been dining out. I spoke to our first year cohort in engineering yesterday and told them all about Oscar 5 and how it was student-led. Don't worry about what the academics say. It's up to you to be innovative. 50 years' time, we want to hear your stories. I think I set the bar pretty high, but hopefully it inspired them to think outside the box as you guys did 50 years ago. I'd just like to now just overview today's running order and briefly introduce the three speakers. So Dr. Owen Mace is one of the original team members involved in building the satellite, and he'll provide a background to the project. These projects that we see are real-world applications, and as I said, we're trying to inspire our students in this, and this is a fantastic story for that. I'm also honoured that Dr. Amanda Caples, who's the lead scientist for Victoria, is here today, and we've invited her to highlight the importance of university and industry collaboration, which is also part of at the heart of the Oscar 5. Since the launch of the Oscar 5 model, there's been changes to policy and strategy within the civil space sector. And to discuss the work of the Australian Space Agency and the future of the sector, we have Mr. Anthony Muffett, who's the Deputy Head of the Australian Space Agency, presenting. I really look forward to hearing from you, Anthony, as well. I'd also like to note the Australian Space Agency have also sponsored this event, and we thank them very much for that support. Before I welcome the first speaker, I'd also like to highlight that we have a replica of the Australia Oscar 5 satellite, which has been kindly loaned to us from Museums Victoria. But we don't just have one, we have another. Octay Valkas and Justin Fox from our engineering workshop here at the University of Melbourne, with Dr. Richard Gillespie, who's the curator of the historical collections within the Melbourne School of Engineering, have built another replica model for us to view today. And that's going to be displayed eventually in our new building, Melbourne Connect, which is on the corner of Grattan, Swanson Street. And that will happen later this year when we move in November. So I'd like to encourage you to look at the models. Don't worry if you don't see them. Just look up in the sky tonight. And you'll see the original flying overhead if you look very, very carefully. So, on with the show. I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Owen Mace, on stage to give an overview of the origins of the project.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much indeed. It's worth just mentioning one other member of the team who was not in Australia but was in the US and absolutely central to having it launched, Jan King, who's with us tonight. Thanks, Jan. And the other thing, of course, is that it's cloudy, so you won't be seeing Australis tonight, sorry. But well over 50, in fact, over 60 years ago, a singular event occurred that excited people around the world, and that was the launch of the first artificial Earth satellite, Sputnik 1. It occurred in October 1957, and it excited all sorts of people, including me. So that when I arrived, in fact, 55 years ago, during Orientation Week, which is what it is now, what's on now, I came across a group of people as mad as me about space, rockets, satellites, astronomy. So I instantly paid my 10 bob, or whatever it was then, to join. I think it was 10 shillings, but I'm not sure. It was certainly dismal currency. Anyway, they were doing more than me clipping out newspaper articles. They were actually listening to satellites, and because they had amateur radio operators members, and those amateur radio operators, hams, understood about radios and antennas and all of that sort of stuff. So we were listening to, or claimed to listen anyway, to various satellites, Russian and American and so on. And pretty soon we were obtaining weather satellite pictures from American weather satellites. And in fact, we were providing weather satellite pictures to the Bureau of Meteorology. And it did lead to NASA being formed, by the way, and also indirectly to the Apollo program. More on that. So there are a couple of pictures that we got, and using borrowed, begged, or probably more likely stolen equipment from the Bureau. And on the left you can see in the upper picture the Great Australian Bight and the Gulf of South Australia, including the one I live on, the Gulf of St. Vincent. Then on the right, you can see at the bottom the Antarctic and New Zealand, North and South Island in the top. Now, it's worth recording formally, John, that there were those in the Bureau who harumphed and said, weather satellite pictures, ha! Pictures of clouds are never going to be useful for predicting the weather, for goodness sake. Well, never mind. We do thank John from the Bureau for their tremendous support. So anyway, one day some idiot said, and I'm claiming to be that idiot, by the way, because I've got the lectern. Some idiot said, well, look, we've been listening to satellites. Why don't we build one? So, oh, by the way, there are others who claim to be that idiot. But so the interesting thing about this was that there was nothing to draw on. Nobody in Australia had built a satellite. There was very little in the Bayleu to help us. Bayleu Library. And it was the Cold War, so neither side were prepared to give too much away. So we're on our own, and we just did what we wanted to do. But it was an amateur radio satellite. That was important. And really, Mark, you'll be very pleased to know that we used, though we didn't know it at the time, really we used system engineering principles to decide what we wanted to build. So without going into the details, really that's what we did. But I will talk about three segments. The first and the most interesting, the first and most interesting for some is the space segment, and this is what the electronics we had on board. So there were two transmitters, VHF transmitter on the bottom right-hand side at 144.050 megahertz, transmitting at the enormous power of 50 milliwatts. For those that are not number aware, that's a 20th of a watt. So, you know, a tiny fraction of any one of these lights. But it was enough. That was in the 2-metre amateur band. Then, as a first, we thought, well, let's put a transmitter on in the 10-metre amateur band, and that's the 29.450. And that one had a whopping amount of power being transmitted. A quarter of a watt. Can you believe it? Whoa. So, but we knew that we were going to be running on battery, so unfortunately that huge current drain needed to be controlled, so we put in a command system to control it, turn it on and off, and that's what you can see at the top. We better have some telemetry too so that we know what's going on, and so we had a number of sensors sensing battery voltage, battery current, temperatures, and also some horizon sensors, as we call them, to see how it was spinning. Because we decided, Steve, that we would see if we could stop the rotation of the satellite in orbit. Now, whenever a satellite is ejected into orbit, and particularly we feared we would be injected with a spin because we would be sent out from the launch rocket using in fact, they turned out to be bed springs. I'm serious. Don't laugh. We knew it was going to spin. So we devised a means of slowing it down, slowing the spinning down, and roughly aligning it with the Earth's magnetic field. That's good because it is, after all, transmitting signals, and so rather than have it spinning and the on the ground receiving the signal one moment and then it becomes less favourably inclined, oriented, we'd roughly have it oriented for much of the time. So that worked ridiculously well, rather well and better than we thought. There was, of course, the antennas and the structure. Now, for the ground segment, and this is kind of not as sexy, but nevertheless important, we were expecting and got thousands of amateur radio operators around the world listening to it and recording the numbers from it. So how do you tell thousands of amateur radio operators around the world when and where to look, how to record the data, and where to send it in? Well, the answer is you have a ground segment and an organisation to do that. And part of it was what we call standard orbits, and that's just if the elderly amongst us will recognise a computer printout. It came on paper just like that, and was printed out at a rather horrendous and unseemly speed, and the idea was that you could look up the numbers and so on and figure out where to, simple arithmetic, figure out where to point your antenna. There was also a support segment of media funding and just general support, project management, I suppose you'd call it these days. So the media was important because we were impecunious students. If you're not sure what that means, it means we didn't have any dough. So we needed companies to give us stuff, whatever it was, including bed springs. So we mounted quite a considerable campaign on radio, television and the press. And so when we arrived at the Henderson Spring Works and put our case that we wanted to bed springs, but not just any old bed springs, they had to be a certain size and a certain stiffness so that they pushed the satellite with a minimum of spinning. They were equal, in other words. So while the receptionist was keen to throw me out, she grudgingly agreed to get the engineer in. The engineer recognised me from the press and the project and said, sure, come back in 2 weeks. We did, and they flew. So that was the importance of the ground segment and the media. Yes, it was a group of undergraduate and postgraduate students, David and Peter, and they were really important members of the team. Oh, well, all were important, of course. Now, you build a satellite. It's not a bad idea to have some idea as to whether it might work or not in the air. And there were no satellite, remember? There's nobody built a satellite. So there was no testing facilities. So we had to make do with testing bits and pieces. So once again, the Bureau came to the... I'm not sure whether they really knew, but anyway, doesn't matter. This is a weather balloon, which we flew, or something like part of it. And there's young Richard, looking just as handsome as he does today, because he worked for the Bureau. Thank you, John. And blowing up the weather balloon. So we delivered it to the West Coast, and therein lies a whole bunch of stories. But I've already gone over my 8 minutes, I dare. Yes, I shall ignore the nod. And all sorts of stories there. Anyway, we delivered it, and it wasn't launched immediately. Conspiracy theory, of course, that's where that comes in. And but 2.5 years later, an organisation on the East Coast called AMSAT, Amateur Satellite, of which Jan was a member, took it on as their first project, newly formed, took it on as their first project, and young engineer Jan was given the task of making sure that it would actually work, which he did, and getting the approvals and so on through NASA. Now, everybody denies this, but I was told that it took vice presidential approval for NASA to launch this. Well, that's what I was told anyway, and I'm sticking to it. So anyway, eventually, there it is. It was mounted in the rocket on a Delta rocket, and that's what it looked like actually in orbit. Now, we didn't know what it was going to look like until this picture came through years and years and years later. In fact, last year. So anyway... there it is, fair dinkum. It was launched, and there it is on the evening before, Delta 76 with 6 strap-ons and a second stage, and somebody lit the wick and away she went. And it worked, much to our delight. And I must say, whenever I hear the sound, and maybe we'll play some afterwards, I will admit I tear up when I hear the sound of it. But not now. It's perhaps, well, it's interesting, isn't it? It's wonderful to know that in the 50th year after Australis Oscar V, as it became in orbit, was launched, a second group of Melbourne University students decided to launch, to build a satellite, and it was launched last year. And here they are, a very different crew. Notice the technological changes, obviously. The social changes, women were allowed. But what you won't see are the regulatory changes, which were huge. Anyway, what did we do afterwards? Well, we went about our, as you know, people do. They finish their studies, they get married. I did it the other way around, but that's neither here nor there. Had children and went about our careers, many in space-related industries, one way or another. So before I'm finally thrown off the podium, I would like to recognise the Wireless Institute of Australia, the organisation that represents amateur radio operators, the Bureau of Meteorology, all the companies that by and large willingly gave their product to us, the University of Melbourne, the faculties as they were then, Mark, of science, engineering and law. What's a law student doing? Well, that's another question we'll deal with later. But actually, Richard was one of the real pushers of the thing.
That was Owen Mace, the team leader of the Australis Oscar V project, speaking last Thursday at Melbourne University. We have more from Melbourne University after these messages.
From Sandringham to South Yarra, you're listening to Southern FM.
Where this is the Space Show, and we are at Melbourne University bringing you the events of last Thursday when we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the launching of Australia's second satellite to reach orbit, but the first satellite to actually be built. Owen Mace, we've just heard from. We're going to hear from him again now, and he's going to introduce Richard Tonkin. Now, Richard is a good friend of the Space Show. He's been on us many times and was last on the show in January, celebrating the actual anniversary of the launch.
Speaking of Richard, where the hell is he? Oh, there he is. I noticed that he's just received a telegram. Now, for you young whippersnappers, a telegram is, I suppose, best likened to an email of today. It's in fact delivered, or was delivered, and we use them a lot, delivered by a boy on a bicycle riding from the nearest post office. We received a telegram, and Richard's about to read it out. Richard.
I love him dearly, but I was the law student. And it was my idea to build the satellite. So there was a boy on a bike, and if you look down Tin Alley, you can probably see him riding down on his red PMG bike back to the GPO. We've received the following message. My colleagues at the Surrey Space Centre and Surrey Satellite Technology Limited and I send our heartiest congratulations to the Australis and AMSAT teams on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the launch of Australis Oscar V, which was one of the early pioneers of small satellites that have spawned the global new space industry. Indeed, as I was just entering university, AO5 sparked my interest in satellites and was an exemplar and catalyst for the later UOSAT project at Surrey University in Guildford in England. AMSAT groups worldwide have built upon your example, and a further 95-plus amateur radio satellites with a wide range of capabilities, now including the geostationary QO100, geostationary being over the equator 36,000 kilometres up, so it stays in the one position, in effect. The recent formation of the Australian Space Agency makes this a very appropriate occasion, and I wish the very best to the Melbourne Space Program, who built the CubeSat last year, for their future endeavours. Signed, Professor Sir Martin Sweeting, ABE, and other degrees, Executive Chairman, Surrey Satellite Technology Limited, Chairman of the Surrey Space Centre. So that's a lovely endorsement from him.
There is a book about this project, quite a fascinating read. It's available in hardback, and I can thoroughly recommend it. I've got a copy myself, and it's, as I said, a jolly good read. Anyway, Richard and Owen are now going to talk about the book.
There is a book which Owen originally wrote, and he's very kindly allowed me to be a co-author because I did a bit of editing. In the book, on page 35, is a quote, and it's not a quote from Owen or I. It comes from overseas, and it talks about a different time, but the same age group that Owen and the group and I were involved in. And it says, "There is no energy source in the universe quite so powerful and intoxicating as youth. As people age, they tend to compromise, to settle, to reach no longer for the stars, but for their spectacles. And then only to see restrictions and obstacles wherever they look. They irrationalise youthful vigour or arrogance, depending on your age, to recognise no such boundaries nor common sense limitations. Nothing is impossible." And that's what happened to us. Nothing was impossible. And now, to paraphrase President Kennedy, the torch has passed to the new generation, and there are at least two guys here from the Melbourne Space Program who built and launched the CubeSat last year, and it's up to you guys now to carry on what we started 50 years ago. Now, finally, I think I'm within about 1.5 minutes. Would the people who made this possible, the guys, I'm sorry there were no girls, who we discovered girls later, who built Australis Oscar 5, please stand up. And would you acknowledge them? Please?
Now, I'll reach for my glasses. And the other thing I'd like to say is that I'm glad Richard, in a way, claimed to be the person who thought of the idea of Australis, because it means that I can relinquish the title of some idiot. Look, that was actually practiced, we knew that. Anyway, yeah, so what I'd like to do now is to... Today's the launch of the second edition of this book that Richard just mentioned.
I've read the first version of the vision of this book. I'm going to plug it a bit for you, Owen. And it's a very uplifting story, but towards the end, I sort of sensed there was a tinge of regret that Australia didn't embrace Oscar 5 and embrace the fact that we could take leadership in the space area. And I hope we're making a bit of amends now with the Australian Space Agency. So, but before I do that, I've got some thanks, and I'm also going to tell you how you can buy the book. I've been asked to read out a website.
You go to a website.
Oh, www.atfpress.com. Look, we'll have the books out here. If you want to buy the book, the website's on the back. Come and get it. I can recommend it.
As mentioned earlier, there was a model of the Australis Oscar 5 satellite present. That model is being kept by the Science Works Museum, and Nick Crotty is the collections manager, and he's in charge of it. He wouldn't let me touch it for obvious reasons, but which we'll get to during our discussion. So here we go with Nick Crotty.
Welcome to the space show, Nick.
Thank you. Yeah, it's wonderful to be here and be part of such a fantastic event.
And you've got an amazing, well, on one level it's amazing, another it just seems so ordinary. What is it?
So it's a model of the Australis Oscar 5 satellite, and it's made with some very humble items. It's a simple aluminium box, some pieces of wood, some aluminium foil, and then the antennae are actually made out of measuring tape, which they got at a local hardware store here in Carlton.
Well done. And how accurate is this compared to the original that's now in space?
So we think that this was made prior to the actual satellite that's in space, and so they used it to actually work out if there was enough space inside it to fit the battery and the electrical components. And so in the actual end satellite that's currently still up in space at the moment is just very slightly larger because they couldn't quite fit everything that they needed in. But other than that, it's pretty accurate. The actual satellite still has, they still used measuring tape as antennae. Yeah, they needed some kind of steel strip that would retract easily, and the measuring tape is ideal for that and already made.
And I notice you're wearing rubber gloves.
Yes. So at the museum, we obviously look after our objects, and there are oils and things on it, on our even clean hands. So I just have them in if I need to touch the object in any way. Yeah.
And is this ever on display, or you keep it in the storeroom?
Last year it was on display as part of the Revolutions exhibition, which is about the 1960s. And later this year it's actually going on display at the National Archives in Canberra as part of an exhibition there. Unfortunately, it's actually very fragile, so it can't be on permanent display. Yeah, it is on our Collections Online website.
So people can have a look at the picture at your website, which is?
The website is, so if you search for Museums Victoria Collections, that will come up, and on there just search for Oscar.
Oscar. Well, thank you, Nick, for joining us on the Space Show.
Thank you very much. It was great.
And that was Nick Crotty, who is the Collections Manager at ScienceWorks Museum. Now, Owen Mace had a surprising announcement to make, and yes, we all gasped in astonishment when we heard it.
Look, I do have a remarkable announcement to make. Oh, maybe two. I can announce that to the world that Heritage Victoria will support an application for Australis Oscar 5 to be recognised and given a heritage listing. Now, the relevance of that is, it'll be the first one in the world. Yet another first for Australis. Thank you, Alice. That's not there yet. I mean, you know, they'll support, just like Project Oscar said, we'll try to find you a launch, but you've got to make a start somewhere now.
Well, that's an ambitious task, but we wish them all luck on that. And, well, event's just about over, so it's time to raise your glasses, ladies and gentlemen.
But please, just maybe we can have a toast to Oscar, to Australis Oscar 5 in the next, what is it, 99,950 years.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
and there we must leave our stint at Melbourne University. We're going to go back there next week when we hear some more of the speeches and hear from the Australian Space Agency itself. But, look, search as I might, there's been no song about this satellite. So let's have the Virtues, which is something that would have been around at the time the satellite was built. This is Guitar in Orbit. This has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie. As I said, we will be back next week.